So, with respect to the easements, it's a contract, it's point one. So this is what you've got to rely upon in the future. So if the company receives approval from the Commerce Commission, it does impact your property. Hopefully everything goes well, but if it doesn't, then that's a document that you have to rely upon. You know, again, typically the type of things and terms that need to be in an easement are going to be ones that an attorney that's experienced with pipeline negotiations will know to put in. If you don't have any experience in it, you're not going to know what to put in. And why have they learned this? Well, unfortunately, they've done it for years and learned from, past, issues that they've seen where farmers have been negatively impacted and they can't do anything about it. You know, and as an attorney, when you're representing a client or a farmer, there's nothing more frustrating than not being able to help someone. So, again, these are going to be one-sided. And what they're going to do is going to basically rewrite the easement and take out the provisions that are onerous, and they're going to be adding in provisions which protect you. Because guess what? They're not going to be in the agreement. This is kind of the playbook. You can follow the project and where it's at. You've got more power and more leverage to negotiate before they grant the eminent domain. You're going to want to review the AIMA. Once that AIMA is final, they will send a copy of it out. They'll file it with the Commerce Commission. So we, of course, will send it out to the County Farm Bureau managers. They will have it. They will distribute it. You'll get a copy of it. The Department of Ag will send it out as well. They'll ask for a list from the company of any landowner that could be impacted. So you will get a copy of the final AIMA once the company does enter it with the Department of Agriculture. The other thing that you're going to want to do is look at how it impacts your property. Because this could impact, one, whether they can put it on your property. Do you have something that would force them to not locate it on your property? Federal floodplain easement. There are certain things that you may have. Archaeological sites. I've got someone right now that has that issue, and they're going through the process of getting approval and working with the state on that. Mineral interests in some parts of the state, that's going to be a big factor. When they're in coal country, where they're longwall mining, and that farmer that has all that coal, and that's going to be stranded if they put the pipeline on his property, that's an important issue there. Some parts of the state, oil and gas. And that's a big issue. I don't know if we have anything like that here, but these are just some things for you to think about, not just the surface. We've been talking about the surface. Look at your land use. What do you have on your land? And what can you do to either impact where it's routed or the money that they compensate you with? Also, CRP. If anyone's got land in CRP, and if it's going to be impacted, and you could potentially be in a situation where you got to pay back the government a penalty, that's the company's responsibility. Again, that's something, all of these things I'm talking about have to be in the easement itself. Again, don't sign the agreement. They know it's one-sided. They expect you to counter and ask for changes. We've already told them that. Ray had a conversation with them and let them know, hey, we're going to tell everybody to go to an experienced pipeline attorney that knows what they're doing, and they're going to rewrite your agreement that has all the protections in it that we want. So, they're expecting that from you. So what they start off with is just their standard agreement, and unfortunately, they get by with it because some people will just sign it. So, and that's why we're doing as many educational efforts that we can. So here's kind of a checklist. This is by no means exhaustive. So this is just basic. The first thing that you're going to want to do is, in the very first paragraph of the easement, It's the, what we call the grant clause. And they're going to go and get approval to build a pipeline. It's going to be a certain width. But you're going to have to actually limit and change what it says. Because the easement that they hand you is going to give them the right to do more than just build one pipeline of a certain size approved by the Commerce Commission. So I've seen where you got a good easement, they'll actually specify the pipeline, the case number, where the ICC has approved it, and the size of the pipeline. But you got to limit them to one pipeline. Otherwise, they'll turn around and put two or three in, or however many they can put in. So that's the first rule of thumb. Limit it to one pipeline. Limit it to an underground pipeline. So, you know, they can put all kinds of facilities on the top. I've had a couple of farmers lately where the company wants to come in and put in odorization tanks or facilities on the top on the farmland. If you've got a good easement, they've got to come back to you and ask for that and compensate you for that. So if they tell you they're just putting in the pipeline on your property, that easement should just be for a pipeline. They want to put in anything else, they've got to negotiate for that. And you've got to put in specifically what it is, limit it to that, and then you're going to attach, at the end of the day, the legal description of where it's crossing your property. Because you want to nail that down on that 50-foot right-of-way where it is on your property. So that will protect you in the future. And unfortunately, I've seen it time and time again where farmers need that protection in the future, because then they'll come in and say, oh, that's enough room for us to put in another line or overlap it. You've got to nail down that 50-foot right-of-way, one pipeline, no right to relocate it, because guess what? That's what they're going to do. You say 50 feet, but we can relocate it wherever. They're going to take that easement and come back and say, well, we got the right to put it wherever we want anyway. So that's another fun one that they like to put in there. Limit access rights. I don't care whether it's a pipeline or a transmission line agreement. Companies love to put in this paragraph that allows them to, when they're maintaining their pipeline, if something happens, or just routine maintenance, that they'll have a term in there that says, we get to come on not only the easement, but all of your land that you own next to it, and any other land that you may buy in the future. So yeah, that's a fun one. So they can and should change that language, and they will, but you have to call them out on it. So that's I have like a top 10 list of favorites. That one's up there. Again, this agreement's going to start out with the kitchen sink. That's the first paragraph. Tell them, no, we're not giving you the kitchen sink. You get one pipeline, underground pipeline. Make them describe where it's going to go out on your property. Not going to give them access to all your property. So I've seen this where we've had harvest, and they want to go in and do routine maintenance, and then they go and they just destroy a field of, you know, corn or soybeans. So that's why that provision is important. So they can change it. They've got the language to do it. Attorney knows what they're doing. They've got it as well. So the other thing you want to do is reserve all the rest of the rights to you. So if they build this right and they bury it, which I'm going to talk about this more in the AMA, it's going to be 5 feet. We have to negotiate, and the Department of Agriculture negotiates on your behalf to make sure the company buries it 5 feet so that, you know, we don't hit it with our equipment. And we know 20 years down the road, it's not going to be 5 feet on the property. There's erosion. Things happen. Which is why we want it buried 5 feet. There also needs to be clearance between your tile lines. So these are all things that when you're, if you look at the AMA, it addresses those. So look at that and see if you want to change additional protections that aren't in that agreement. And then what you do is you put them into your easement companies used to doing this. Attorneys that represent farmers in these cases know the terms of the AIMA, and they know what they like to improve, and those are things that go into your actual easement. But again, you're supposed to be able to farm on it. Make sure you've got a sentence. I know it seems simplistic, but put a sentence in there that, yes, you've got the right to farm on it. So what they like to do is, during the construction process, is prevent you from being on the easement strip and the temporary easement. So, and that gets to be a point of contention, especially where we've got an ag inspector who's supposed to be monitoring it. And I have some farmers who want to either monitor construction themselves or have their own agent monitor the construction, especially when it comes to fixing tile lines and actually making sure that they're burying it the 5 feet. So, a farmer in southern Illinois, his attorney negotiated this provision, said that they paid him, they put a provision where they paid the farmer to monitor the construction while they're on his property. That was his most favorite provision in his entire easement. He was out there daily. They were doing the laser siding it, and it land is rolling. What was it, 5 feet? So he had his yardstick out there, and he put it down and said, no, you're not 5 feet. Now you're 5 feet. So, and he's sending videos from his phone to attorneys in the courtroom, just, having a ball with it. But that's what it took to get them to do it right. And some cases it's not intentional. A lot of times they go out and they hire the contractor to build it, or a subcontractor, and they may not know what they're supposed to be doing. I talked to one a few weeks ago, and it's just these big projects, and I asked him about an AIMA, had no idea what it was. Because the company's not communicating it to the contractor who's actually on site, on your property, doing the construction. There are attorneys that will put provisions in your easement that will force a company where the company says, yes, we're going to take this AIMA, and we're going to make sure that our subcontractor and our contractor, everybody on your farmland, knows the terms of it and is going to follow it. Sometimes the ball gets dropped at the very last step. So these are things that you can put in and should put into your easement agreement. Mitigating damages, this is where that AIMA comes in. Tells them they have to separate your topsoil from your subsoil because they don't really understand and you mix it, it's not good. So you want to make sure that they do that. That's in the AIMA itself. Tile systems. Do we have drainage tile here? Okay. That's a big part of the AIMA. If there's running water through it, they've got to do temporary repairs. They've got to flag and mark all the tile that they cut. They've got to give you GPS coordinates of where it's at, because I know a lot of them, it's been in there for years. Unless you've, installed new systems, you may not know where it's at. So there's provisions in there to talk about giving you the location for your tile lines. You want to make sure that they mark it and then repair it correctly. So most people want to use their local tile contractor. That's in the AIMA. If you don't like that or you want more provisions or protections, put that in your easement. So that's typically an area where farmers are pretty particular about how they want that tile system repaired. Put it right in your easement so you can hang your hat on it. And generally we see a provision that says you're going to repair all the tile lines, and if you still have wet spots, then you'll install additional tiles. So there's no point in arguing over whether they repaired it properly or not. Just put a provision in there that says if you've got issues with drainage, they are going to come back in and fix it. So that ends that whole needless argument. If the construction causes drainage problems for you, they need to fix it. And you really need to, with respect to the timeline, we may not know in a year or 2 years. If we've got a drought, you may not know that you've got a problem with the drainage. So your easement needs to take that into account, and don't cut off that period too short. Okay. Compaction and rutting. that's a big problem. They love to go in and do their construction when it's wet. So there are provisions in the AMA that talk about that, you know, not going in and with their cranes and all this heavy equipment under these conditions. You can try and negotiate additional protections. They like to operate on their construction schedule. We know that. So they generally don't care if it's raining. In that situation, they're just causing themselves additional damages for which they have to compensate you. So we want to make sure that you've got those terms in your easement. The erosion and weed control, you know, they've got to fix your conservation areas. But again, the ag inspector, we've talked about that. Sometimes on a project, people in a particular area or county will want a particular inspector or two to monitor construction. It needs to be someone who is familiar with farmland and how this is going to impact it. If you want something, you know, in addition to that, you're free to negotiate that. Again, we've had farmers that have negotiated where they're going to be on site while they're on their property in construction and put an hourly rate in there. So that's another option that you have. Okay. If something goes wrong, no one wants to be out attorney's fees to make them make it right. I know that. So what do? Negotiate a provision where if you've got to enforce it, they pay for your attorney's fees. So that's something that will keep them honest, and it's a deterrent on one hand for them, and it also encourages them to do the right thing and follow the agreement. There needs to be indemnification and hold harmless provisions. You know, here, if there's any environmental issues, if they've got a spill or a leak, or a discharge, or if they're not an explosion, you know, those are provisions that protect you. Attorneys that negotiate these easements are going to beef up the standard terms and make sure that you're covered to the best, you know, that they can think of, and they will, in addition to insurance, I've seen situations where they've looked at issues with bonding as well. So those are just some more financial mechanisms to protect you in the future if something goes wrong. Compensation, they're gonna have an appraisal. You're most likely, most situations gonna be better off getting your own appraiser. Many farmers that go together in groups will do that. Attorney will hire an appraisal company. And we, in particular on the Ameren Illinois River project, the appraisals were so far apart. First, it was ridiculous. And then they actually went out and midway through had to hire a new company because they had so many problems with their appraisers. But that's because they were called out on it by the attorneys that were representing farmers in the case. So don't necessarily buy their appraisal. It's kind of like the easement. It may not be accurate. So that's something that you want to look at. The temporary easement, talked about that a little bit. That's that extra space that they need to actually complete the construction. They do have to pay you for damage to that land as well. And then the permanent easement, that's the 50-foot right-of-way. They do pay for the fair market value, even though it's an easement, and you'll be able to farm on it afterwards. Because you're all going to have that in your easement language. They do pay the fair market value for that land. That's pretty standard. The other thing you want to look at is if there's any increased cost of farming. This is more common where you've got a transmission line and you've got to farm around it. If you've got irrigation and you have to shut it down while during the construction process and you suffer additional crop loss, that would be an increased cost to farming. So those are some things to think about. I don't know if you're going to have them here, but these are things that we've seen Again, we talked about mineral interest, and also if you've got land in CRP, those are some other common areas that we see. So under the law, they have to pay what we call damage to the remainder. So, and basically the concept is that my property with the pipeline is basically damaged and reduced your ability to earn income off of that. So, you know, again, in a transmission line case, it's much more common because it may impact, say, for example, if you have a livestock facility and you've got a transmission line next to it that's going to directly impact the operation itself, your ability to expand it. So if the pipeline's going to cross your property in such a way where it's going to impact your ability to expand your operations, and again, you've got to look at the type of operation you've got, you may have damage to your remainder. So that's an issue that the companies do fight. We definitely see litigation in that area. Not everyone is going to have damage to the remainder. And I think particularly in a pipeline case, it's less common. But you may have it, and it is something where an experienced pipeline attorney is going to know the law and the cases and what you need to prove it. And if you do make that argument, you do have to prove it. You will have to have an expert or someone to back you up on that particular claim. So, but I just wanted to make you aware of that item of damage as well.